You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. Well, I'm doing great. Thank you. let's take a quick look at our markets for today. Have you seen anything unusual or since yesterday? Certainly, we've had a decent amount of volatility off of that yesterday's 1:15 Chicago time Fed interest rate announcement. And I was kind of interested to hear your opinion about that.
The Fed announcement, I mean, compared to what I have seen on Fed days,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of a non-event.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of volatility, but certainly
you know, any volatility at this point is front page news.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, we ran down and then we ran up and then, you know, we ended up right back where we were, pretty much. So.
Yeah. We have. And that's somewhat choppy and a little bit of unusual behavior. I do believe that we're going to see increased volatility now for the next couple of weeks, which is really very helpful for people who are day traders.
And that will get us back into September.
That's right. And from there, then we start picking up the natural seasonal increase in volatility as well. And so I'm very happy that we have this because this really can help. Now, as we're speaking right now, the market is attempting some higher prices. It's been choppy this morning so far. We're still in an uptrend off of the Turning Point Calendar's forecast August 12th daily bottom. That 12th bottom, the August 12th bottom, is best reflected in the Globex market. If you take a look at it, they did bottom on August 12th. They made a low attempting the 984 level. Excuse me, 9. But the August 12th, wherever we went on August 12th bottom, which was 985, I'm correct, we had a target down at 984. They attempted that. The fact that they could not reach 984 on the Globex session still shows that there's unusually strong buying pressure in the market because they couldn't hit a natural level on the downside. I've mentioned this a number of times in the program, that if the market can't hit a natural level and does make a full-on attempt at it, and then begins to reverse and hold above that level, that's an indication of continued buying pressure. That buying pressure may not, and at that point has not shown itself in the market as in the form of higher prices. The market at the time is actually trying to put a bottom in. But that's the beauty of having that information, is that it's telling you that there is buying pressure that is in the future going to reveal itself, because the market, by not being able to reach that level, 984, by staying above it a point and change, that there's enough buoyancy in the market that needs to be released, tension that needs to be released on the upside. So we're seeing that now with the market now in its first day after the bottom on the 12th, and we made a high of 1,015.25 on the Globex last night. So this is good for volatility, this is good for the market, and hopefully we'll have the normal response to this, which is several good weeks, if not more, of increased volatility so that we can day trade the market a little bit better here. For today, we had mentioned in our support and resistance panel over the last week or so about the 1010-1011 level. Yesterday's session did reach that, and somewhat unusually was not able to get beyond it, because under normal conditions, the market yesterday would have gone up to 1013, and it was not able to do that. And so that's an interesting side note as well. So, you know, in a sense, the volatility has picked up, but we're kind of inside a range where the market has not yet completed a natural target on the upside. Even though 1010-1011 is important, enough time had passed so that the next level becomes the magnetic center, so to speak, where prices would naturally go to, which would be the 1013 level. Now, they did do 1013 on Globex, but they've not done it in the pit session yet. And as we've talked before, Globex, Globex is more of a shadow market, even to this day. It's not a full-on market with all three dimensions being fully represented, the, you know, time, space, and volume being represented fully in that market. Someday it probably will be, but it isn't quite there yet.
So I'm curious, I know that you've talked about that you don't, you know, utilize the overnight data because of the reasons you just stated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But whether there is volume and market participation or not, if at 3 in the morning the market spikes considerably higher, puts in a new high,
mm-hmm.
That does not enter into your work the next morning at all?
Well, with regard to, it's a good question, and with regard to our turning points, if Globex, like we did on August 12th was forecast as a bottom in the turning point calendar, that bottom was not made in the pit session. If you take a look at a daily chart of the regular S&P, the actual low came on August 11th. And that's fair. In our system, it's plus or minus one day of accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So the market, with regard to no Globex, put in a one-day early low. But with regard to Globex, and we're reporting it this way, that we are using the Globex for the purpose of saying that it put in a new low, and that marks the turning point. But with regard to price levels, is your question, are we invalidating the fact? I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, you know, the question is not so much about does it have to do with your mm-hmm. with your record keeping practices, but whether or not it fits in with your spatial relationship forecasting.
At this point, we don't use the Globex and the price points reached on Globex or any of the time that takes place on Globex in the spatial relationship forecasting. It's completely left out right now. That doesn't mean that it may not be important that the market did something and touched some number, but we have not found yet that, because of the nature of this particular method, we have not found yet that Globex is fully represents the three dimensions of the market enough to rely on it the way that we rely on it for the pit session. So that's all we're really saying. For people who trade out there and use Globex levels and things like that, it's totally valid, it's fine, and they probably can do well with it. But our method it has to do with more than just simply price movement. And Globex, as you know, can be very, very quiet in volume, and many, many hours can pass with that
right.
very, very quiet volume. When that happens, the normal relationship between time and volume and price and volume and these other things is sort of broken, and that relationship needs to have the full three dimensions operating, the dimension of space, which is what price moves through, the dimension of volume, which is the depth of participation in the market, and the dimension of time. So if any one of those dimensions is allowed to stretch beyond the point where the other dimensions are not able to respond, then the market's not a really full, you're not getting representation in all three dimensions. So as an example, sometimes on Globex, 7 hours will go by, and in that 7 hour period, you will have extremely small price movement and or extremely low volume. Well, with that much price movement having passed, under normal conditions, prices would have reflected the movement of time and have done something that relates them spatially to time. That's why it's called spatial relationship forecasting. If it hasn't done that, it means that the market is not fully represented in all three dimensions. And that is my best explanation about why we can't use Globex or don't use it, because since those periods can go by, since you can have 7 hours of a supposedly live market, and it is live, it is, people are trading it, but in our terms, it's kind of a shadow market, simply because it doesn't have the full representation of all
right.
Dimensions. So that's, I think, the best explanation I have for it, is that normally these three dimensions are linked together, and that linking has to be demonstrated by the market's movement. If the market can show the breakdown of that link, then something is not happening that's normal in that market. And for Globex, that normalcy is the volume, the depth of participation is not there. I mean, you can take a look for yourself what the volume is on Globex. It's extremely small at some points. And sometimes it picks up, and then it gets very much like a normal market.
Oh,
but the three dimensions are definitely connected together.
What really even got me to thinking about it, and again, I know that you're not an indicator-type trader, but just the fact that I can run a day chart of the ES with a simple moving average on it, and I can run, you know, the same time frame chart on a full 24-hour session, including, you know, the Globex, and where that moving average is on those two charts can often be, you know, quite significantly different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And not only because, I mean, it has all this additional data in there. And so then that loop of thinking, you know, that paralysis by analysis kind of thing is like, okay, all right, now I got to figure out which is better, this moving average on a day chart or this moving average on a 24-hour chart.
Mm-hmm.
Today this one was better. Oh, but yesterday that one was better. Yeah. And then that you become the little mouse and the little hamster and the little wheel. You know.
Right. Right. Do we have a minute? How's your time today?
I got some time.
A little time. I'm not going to take too much of it up, but for your listeners and for yourself, I'd like to try to demonstrate a little bit better visually. And if people have a stick pen or a ruler nearby. Do you have a stick pen or a ruler nearby?
I have a stick pen.
Okay. Take that stick pen, and this is for your listeners as well, or a ruler, and take your left finger and your right finger and place that pen or that ruler so that the edges of the pen or the ruler are at your right finger. You know, you're supporting the pen with your right finger and your left finger, and they're at the far extremes of the pen. And hold it out, you know, in front of you, of course. Tell me when you've done that.
Okay.
And, again, just to be real clear, you're simply supporting a pen or a ruler with your left forefinger and your right forefinger in front of you, and your left forefinger is at the far left of the pen or the ruler, and your right finger is at the far right of the pen or the ruler, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't do what I'm about to tell you until I tell you to do it, okay? But what you're going to do is you're just going to, without making any effort, you're holding it straight in front of you so that it's balanced on your hand. If you begin to move your whichever finger starts to move, try to bring one of your other fingers in. One of the fingers will start to move, and it'll get to a certain distance. Don't do it yet. It'll get to a certain distance, and it'll stop, and your other finger will automatically come in and catch up. And I want you to watch that happen. You'll finally end up right in the middle of the pen or the ruler. Watch how your hand, your fingers, one will start to move, the other one will catch up a little bit, it'll start to move towards the center, the left one will begin to move again. Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm not too good at parlor tricks, David. I'm trying.
Well,
I did everything you said.
It's difficult because I can't see for sure that you're doing what I'm asking you to do, and I'm not sure my explanation is clear enough. But you're simply balancing, not even balancing, you're simply holding.
I dropped the pen about 10 times. I don't know.
Okay. Well, do you want me to, I'll describe it one more time. You have a pen or a ruler that you're supporting.
And
with
I'm laying
your
it across my two forefingers, across the top.
Right, at about the middle of your fingers. You know, in your second joint of your
okay.
forefinger.
I got that.
Your left and right forefinger. And you're holding it so that the pen is horizontal to the ground.
Yep.
And you're simply going to start moving your fingers in towards the center. You just relax and move one, whichever finger starts to move first. Just start trying to move simultaneously both fingers in. And one's going to move, the other one's going to catch up, and you're finally going to end up about in the middle.
Okay, I got it. All right, yeah. You were telling me to move my fingers towards the middle of the pencil.
Okay.
And I thought you were telling me to bring it into me. Okay.
Okay.
All right, I follow what you're saying now.
Now that you know, let's do it one more time. And I want to change a little bit of the descriptor here. So put the finger again, hold your ruler or your pen on your left finger and right finger at the extremes of the ruler or the pen around the second joint of your finger. Your fingers are pointing away from your body, and the pen or ruler is horizontal to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to begin to move. The first movement on the left-hand side, I want, instead of you thinking of these as fingers now, I want you to think of your left finger as price. And I want you to think of your right finger as time. Now, let's just say that your left finger starts to move. Price makes a move, and it starts to move for a while. And at some point, it gets to a certain spot where it can move no further because it's connected to time. And time, your right finger, suddenly begins to move towards the center now and begins to catch up. And at some point, they both end up in the center of the pin. What I'm showing you and demonstrating with this is the connectedness of these two dimensions and why we don't use Globex. Because under normal conditions, that pen and those two fingers are all connected. And when one finger moves and gets to a certain fulcrum point, the other finger automatically starts to move. That is the connection between price, the movement of price, and the movement of time.
Okay,
you follow?
The left finger was price.
Yes.
The right finger was?
Time.
And what was the pen?
Well, the pen is the, without making the pen part of the dimensional makeup here, I'm showing the connection between the movement of price.
Okay, because what seems to be
time.
Happening to me, and I may, again, not be doing this properly, is as I begin to move my hand left, it pushes...
Your finger left.
Yeah,
you're moving your... Yeah, your hand, that's right, your whole hand.
As I begin
right.
to move left, it pushes the pen...
Well, you don't want the, you don't want to be pushing the pen. You want your finger sliding under the pen. You want the movement of your fingers. The pen basically stays pretty much the same, and your fingers are what's moving. Under the, your hands are what's moving. They're sliding. The pen is sliding. Your fingers are sliding underneath the pen while supporting it.
I'm pretty sure I got a handle on what you're trying to show me here.
Okay.
But what we really want you to do is to make a YouTube video.
Okay. That's probably necessary to get this really right. But here's my point. I really just want to make this point. This
okay.
is an excellent example of this. Because the pen is the support system, you could call pen space as an example, it's the support system for both time and price, the movement of price. And when one of them moves, it cannot move without having a impact on the other. The other, the time in this case, will suddenly be called into motion because price has moved a certain amount. Or, as an example, time will move, and it can only move a certain amount of hours or time periods before price needs to catch up with it and move. And this is the connection that is broken during Globex, because many, many hours can go by where price does not make its commitment and connection to move, just like it does with this example here. You can't break this example. If you do this example correctly, you will not be able to break it. The laws of balance, fulcrum, and other things, just like the any set of laws, are constantly at work here. In Globex, the fact that one of the dimensions is not fully represented means that the true connection between these cannot be maintained. And so in our type of work, where we are connecting and using those dimensions, we're not able to use Globex. So this is a visual example, and I'm, you know, I realize we're on radio and we can't perfectly show you exactly what I'm trying to describe, but everything has to be operating in order for those for the pen. The pen is describing to you how the connection works. That price can move some, time will suddenly catch up. Price will move some, time will move, and it goes back and forth until you end up in the center, and the center is the balancing point. And so this is a great demonstration, and it's not so simple. It sounds like a simple demonstration because I'm just telling you visually and verbally what to do. But this is going to take some thought on you and your listeners' part to study what is really happening here and then make the connection to what happens between price and time in the market, because this is a great example of just that, of how the movement of time cannot or the movement of price. Price can only go so far before time has to make its movement. And time can only go so far before price has to make its movement, because the two of them are dimensionally connected. So this dimensional connection is broken during Globex. And the proof that it's broken is that many, many hours can go by with price doing absolutely nothing, which tells us that there isn't a full representation in all three dimensions during Globex. So that's what this is. I'm trying to explain two things. One is why we don't use Globex, how I can demonstrate also the connection between price and time. And sometimes when we're in person or if we do a Globex, or not a Globex, a YouTube video or something, this would be, I can demonstrate this and make it much clearer for people. It's a really, really good example of how to think about market movement if you're going to take the dimensional approach to it. And the only reason we take the dimensional approach to it is because spatial relationship forecasting, the word spatial itself obviously implies three dimensions in order for it to be spatial. So we're looking at the market as a three-dimensional, for sure, three-dimensional phenomena. And it's not mysterious to say that because everything is three-dimensional, even the thoughts inside your head, which are electrical in nature. They all have the three dimensions. So the market is again, a three-dimensional phenomena. And those three dimensions are, again, volume, which is the depth, time, which is the time itself, which can't be changed or messed with, and then space. And space is actually what price moves through. Price itself is not a dimension. Price itself is an attribute of the dimension of space. So those are the three dimensions that the market operates in, and under normal conditions, those three dimensions will be represented beautifully, and that's one of the reasons why we're able to make these special types of forecasts called super trades and other things like that, because those, when the market is moving, those dimensions are totally hooked up and interacted with each other, and very unique types of forecasts can be made once you understand the relationship between them and what the market would have to do under a given set of conditions, given the positions of each one of those dimensions. That's probably the best explanation I've given to you of how this works. And you have to tell me if I'm making any sense or if you're getting any little flash of light or if there's, if I just sound like somebody who didn't graduate from high school. Just let me know now.
No, you're making sense. I just,
Did I lose you with the ballpoint pen?
Yeah, I could just say, oh yeah, I got it, and just move on. But okay. You know, I'm trying to be legitimate here, and I believe I understand the concept, but I don't. I guess what I haven't had is the aha moment. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you though.
Yeah, it's not easy to give an aha moment on the radio with when you're discussing how three dimensions are connected. It's much easier visually, and again, that's why it's called spatial relationship forecasting, because I didn't figure this out because I'm smart. I figured it out spatially. I figured it out as a visual spatial relationship. And then I went from there and figured out some of the math behind it, etc. And the markets are really a beautiful example of how you can apply that principle to anything that fluctuates, because everything that fluctuates is in three dimensions. And you know, like I've always said so many times on your show, it's a principle. It's not a law, but it's a principle, and the principle works out beautifully in the market. And I'm amazed to see it, markets and prices run up to touch levels that are indicated by the other two dimensions, that the price is literally forced to go to this one position in order to validate the other two dimensions. And that pen example is a perfect example of that happening with using the rules of, or the principle of balance and fulcrum and these other things.
I think I need to try it with like a broomstick or something.
No, or just actually probably the best way is a ruler.
Okay.
Because the pen rolls around and stuff. And again, if we ever do something where I could be on, we could all have everybody on one screen or something, we could demonstrate something like this a lot clearer. But I hope some of your listeners get at least a general idea.
You know, I've been meaning to mention to you, we should do like a webinar sometime.
Well, we've talked about that, and I would have to come up with ideas of what I would want to demonstrate and show.
Okay.
It would be a lot of fun to do that, and it would be probably a lot of help to people. You can see, though, that when you're studying price itself, which is worthy of study all by itself, the movement of price patterns, etc., you are not including in that other portions of what the market exists in. So to use an indicator and to use price can be valuable, and I even have some indicators that I might want to go over with you that I think are valuable for the market.
Oh, that'd be
great.
That
would be, which are useful to people.
Yeah, and all the cool kids are doing webinars these days.
They are cool. All the cool kids are, and I'm a little slow on that. I'm still not trading the electronic market. I'm still in the large S&P contract, calling my broker on the floor, and so I'm a little, you know. Listen, I've said this before. I recently just found out the Beatles broke up, so I'm trying to catch up. Give me a break here, you know. Anyway, okay. So,
hey, tell us about soybeans.
Okay. Soybeans today are declining. They gapped open dramatically higher today, and they reached some apparently important targets on the upside. And our system earlier today, the soybean messenger, put in a buy limit at $10.41, and we exited that position at $10.48.
Nice.
And that ended up, yeah, that was a nice trade, and that was the aggressive exit. The market then reversed at that level and continued on down and broke down to new recent lows here, substantially lower, down at 10.25. There is some important, there's potentially another trade for this market. Now, just for your information, that's the equivalent of about 7 points in the S&P. This is, again, why we like the soybean market. It has a lot of volatility, a lot of intraday range, and as a general rule, it's easier to call than the S&P is. As a general rule, I think people would find that to be the case. The S&P has 500 individual components that are moving back and forth, and that gives the market certain qualities which make it actually easy to read, but it also adds some complexity to that market as well. The S&P is a wonderful, wonderful market. It's the one that I've, you know, many people have, like me, fallen in love with it and, you know, love to trade it, love to call it and do everything that they do with it. Soybeans is not anywhere near as attractive to some people, but it is a really good trading market. So, something for people to consider. We've made more money today in we've actually made money today in the soybeans where we have not made money in the S&P yet. So, the S&P today has been pretty much a market that's moving straight up here. And like I said yesterday, the natural position for this market at this point in time would be for them to test, 1013. So any further advance and test 1013 today is important and will possibly prompt a new entry in our system. So,
did you buy the beans on the first touch of 41 or the second touch?
The first touch. We placed an order before they even got to the price.
Okay.
So they went down there, they spiked through it to 40 or a little bit lower, and then reversed off that level. That reversal, for your information, could have turned into a multi-hour reversal, but we exited our aggressive at a point where they were either going to confirm that or fail. And it turns out that they failed at that, and we're not good enough to have shorted the market at that point or at any other point for the further breakdown to 25, but we did get a piece out of it on the upside. And a big part of what we do is risk management and making sure that we're only taking trades that we can be quite certain of. And, you know, your skill level, you know, I've said this so many times, the market's very fair. It pays you exactly what you're worth.
All right. You know, I find it very interesting that there was a touch of 41. You bought it, and off she went. She comes back to 41. Off she goes again. Not quite as far this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now she comes back down through 41, rallies up, bumps her head on. Guess what, folks?
Mm-hmm.
41. And rolls over and goes down, dooby doo, down, all the way down to 10.26. So that 10.41
right.
is really a key number.
It's the key number. It's a number that could have reversed the market for a multi-hour advance. But the first point that they would have had trouble at would have been 48 to 49, which they did. And rather than wait around for a pullback and hold on for later, we thought that would be the place to take an aggressive exit. If the market did reverse there and give us a second test and confirmation at or above 41, we would have re-entered the market on the long side. But it didn't. It just failed straight down, and we did not take a short position from that point forward.
And I'm just going to mention that to anyone out there listening who trades and you don't journal your trades or you've never journaled your trades, I encourage you to journal them for a while, even if you're doing well. Even if you're okay, if you're getting points every day, journal your trades for a while. Because the first time that I sat in journal trades, I was amazed. Like at the end of the day, let's say I had made 5 trades. 4 of those trades were off the same number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as I pointed out here that there were, you know, 3 good trade opportunities off one number, that 1041. There was 2 nice long trades and 1 super short trade, all off of 1041. And and when I was first beginning to journal trades, I was like, why do they, you know? And I never put it together. I never learned the art of the technical analysis of numbers. I just began to realize that certain numbers were important. And why? I don't know. I mean, I can add them up. I can subtract them. I can, you know, are they even? Are they? I don't know. All I know is if there's an important move made at a particular number, I'm going to make a little note. Gee, that may be one of those important numbers. And when the market comes back at some later point to test that number, be it today, tomorrow, or maybe even next week, I'm going to pay, you know,
pay some attention to that.
Attention to that.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. The market does definitely.
It's like a magnet.
It does. It repeats numbers. There are certain numbers that are people use that term. It's a very common phrase. You know, this is magnetic. You know, this number is magnetic. The market's going to want to go to it like a magnet and things like that. These natural levels that we've talked about so many times, the natural levels like 1013, this is a number that we mentioned yesterday that the market would normally have gone through the 1010, 1011 area and gone to 1013 because 1013 is now the number, well, you know, and again, not to sound too confusing, 1013 is the number that all the dimensions force price to go to. The other two dimensions are requiring 1013. So that's why yesterday's support resistance panel didn't have 1010 and 1011 in it, and it jumped right to 1013 because price is at a point right now where it should confirm the, lack of a better word, instruction from the other two dimensions that this has to balance off and touch 1013. That's why they're attempting 1013 at this point, and until they touch that, I would not want to be a short seller at this point in the market until we get to 1013. If they were to fail at 1013, if they, in other words, not be able to reach 1013, first I'd be scratching my head. And then I'd be watching for any indication for a much larger breakdown because that would be an indication of potentially enormous selling pressure. 1013 is the natural level for the market and we're hoping to see it get tested or higher today. And then there may be a trade that we can take off that at that time. So with all that having been said, this weekend in our report, and people can sign up and get a free report if people want to. They don't have to buy anything. There's nothing. There's no pressure to buy. It's simply a report that tells you it's a free nightly report, so you get a basic overview of what we did each day. But it also gives you our longer-term outlook as well if that's of some use to you in your trading. And we'll update our longer-term outlook in this weekend's report here. We also have, as you know, Labor Day is coming up, and that's going to be a long weekend. I just want to mention to people now that the Labor Day weekend, of course, we're inching in towards the final quarter of the year. We're expecting volatility to pick up, like you were saying earlier. Not only do we have the interest rate report yesterday that picks up the volatility, but then we're going to get out of summer where the seasonality of increased volatility picks up. And so there should be some great trading, is what I'm saying, between now and the end of the year. So we're still deep in the summer right now, but we're getting past the halfway point, and with this report, I think we should start seeing over this week and next, we should see some very improved intraday movement. I'm very much hoping for that, so that we can get more of the normal swing trading action that takes place in the market, and so we can make some money with them. Also, if we do break out to some new highs, our turning point calendar will probably trigger another turning point as a top. The last one was the August 12th bottom. So if we do break any new highs tomorrow, which is Friday, I'd be very happy to mention to you if the calendar notes another turning point for people who are interested in trading, swing trading, longer term over a multi-day period down to important targets on the downside for people who are willing to trade with risk management on the overnight on the Globex session and be willing to be stopped out if necessary whether that's with a gain or without a gain, but be but trade with risk management. You know, there's nothing wrong with trading to win. We all want to win, but you have to balance it out with like everything. You have to have the three dimensions in your trading. That's the name of our book, Three Dimensional Trading, and it has nothing to do with the technique so much as it has to do with that you have to balance the idea of winning with the idea of protecting yourself in the market and managing profits along the way, and making sure that you're not just grabbing a trade because you have nothing to do. And I want to remind people again, this is a good thought to help you not get carried away with chasing a market. There's usually 1 to 3 really excellent trading opportunities in any session. So try to keep that in mind, that there's going to be 1 to 3 every single day. And if you miss a trade, and missing a trade is part of trading, if you're going to miss a trade, that's fine. Don't let that change what you do on the next trade. Don't make that get you to jump in something where you don't have your risk parameters and things like this. Put your trades together, and if you miss it, that's just the way it goes. I've joked about this so many times. It's a lot faster than buying and selling real estate. You know, you get 3 opportunities a day. Wait for those opportunities. Even if you miss one of those opportunities, don't let that change your behavior. Wait for the next opportunity. Trade by exception. You know, when you learn to have the right attitude towards the market, and the attitude is just to wait until something really steps out at you, you'll find that the trades actually chase you instead of you chasing the trade. You'll actually, if you can relax a little, you'll actually see when the market gets to a critical position in some way, shape, or form, regarding, you know, your particular understanding of the market, rather than you trying to turn everything into a trade because you're anxious to trade, you want to make your money, you have somewhere you have to go and all that stuff. That's just not how it works. It works by you allowing the market to work its way around to some critical spot where, in, like I said, one way or the other, you and your system recognizes this as a critical juncture. And there's usually 1 to 3 of those a day. And the more skilled you are, there's more of those. But for us, we try to trade 1 to 3 times per session, depending on the market's condition. Now, as we're speaking here, the market did make a high of 10-12, and they're selling off from that. Our preference is to see 10-13 reached. And again, if they were unable to reach that level, that would be a very important indication in our work, because the market is set up right now to touch that number. The forces that are in the second and third dimension want the price of 10-13 to be reached. Yes, it was reached on Globex. And again, it's interesting. Globex satisfied a number that we're not able to satisfy in the pit session. We don't use Globex, so with regard to the pit session, we have not completed that yet. And we read this initially as potential weakness in the market if they're not able to touch 10-13. They should be able to touch and spike through 10-13. It's an easy number. And if they can't, that'll give us some indication for the potential of already existing selling pressure in the market. So keep that in mind, and we'll update this idea about 10-13, depending on how they handle today over the next couple of days.
Okay.
We'll go from there. Unless you have any other questions for me, or any other... What if I had questions for you, Duane? Could we stay on for another 30 minutes?
Sure.
No.
What do you want to know?
No, I'm just playing.
My life's
with you.
An open book.
I know it is, and you're very honest and very upfront with a lot of the information you've told us. And sometimes I even think you may tell more than you need to tell. You know, about yeah. You know your life and things like this. But that's very nice that you're open enough like that. And I think people appreciate hearing that. I really do. I think people appreciate the fact that you're open and honest with conditions and situations, and you're not trying to put on a big air about something. You know. And that's nice. And so it's an attractive feature. So don't stop doing that. You just never know what you're going to get with me, do you, Duane?
Sometimes you say too much, but don't stop saying it.
Don't stop saying it. We like it.
Okay.
Now, you haven't done it in the wrong way. I meant, you know, you've talked about your personal life. You've talked about...
Oh, I know. Yeah, but, you know, that's part of who I am and part of what I do is because, you know... People out there, they get beat down. They get discouraged. People tell them they're no good. They're never going to make it. Mm-hmm. And I just want them to know that, you know, there's a human being who was completely written off by everyone on the face of planet Earth, except my grandmother, I guess. And God was able to turn that all around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for me to share that message with people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
no doubt.
That's the message that I have to take to the world. I have to. That's mm-hmm. If I never trade again, if I never am involved in a business, I have to take that message to the world.
Well, you're doing a great job.
God can take a miserable, wretched, broken, washed up, no good, down the tubes life and make it whole again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Oh, gosh. No, it's more than you can say. It's more than you can say in words.
All right, I think now would be an appropriate time to pass the collection plate. If we'd all stand and join me in Rock of Ages. All right, buddy, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, Dwayne, thank you so much. Pleasure being on the show, and I look forward to tomorrow. Let's see what they bring us here.
All right, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.